And we're holding on to Sadiq Hey Ahmed Bey's seven lines from bottom. We learned yesterday, we had, first of all, Machloikas Tanoim, Rab Meir, Rab Yehuda, and Rab Shimon. When a person steals a cow and then later on it gave birth, or a sheep, and later on he sheared off the wool. So what do we do as far as the extra value from the wool or from the baby? So we had Rab Meir saying you have to pay the whole thing, and we ended up saying that Rab Meir does that as a knas, even though basically we would say midaraisa, he would have acquired the wool of the baby with a shinui, but Rab Meir is penalizing him and saying that he has to return it. We said Rabbi Yehuda had said gzeila chazeres ba'ineha, that you return it as is. And Rab Shimon had said that we do it ki'ilu hishuma b'kesef, as if it was evaluated with money and put in and put under his temporary ownership. Meaning, in other words, that so we said, what does Rabbi Yehuda mean and what does Rabbi Shimon mean? First, we discussed that it means what happens if the wool hasn't been sheared off yet, for example. Rabbi Yehuda would say that that also goes back to the nigzal, and Rabbi Shimon says that that belongs to the gazlan. Then we said that no, actually, even when it's still on the gzela, Rabbi Yehuda holds it belongs to the gazlan because he was koneh, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon says he gets a percentage of it, like the way it would be if they had made a tzoin barzel agreement between them, where the one taking care of the sheep would be entitled to a certain percentage of the wool and other profits. So it is over here as well. So the last thing we mentioned in that connection was, what about appointed of Shimon? Does that mean he becomes an actual partner of the animal, and therefore that he's entitled to a certain amount of the meat of it? Or does it just mean that the owner can say, look, I understand that you're entitled to a certain percentage of it because this wool grew while it was in your possession and you took care of the animal and whatever. Therefore, I'll give you your percentage, but I'm going to give it to you in money. I'm not obligated to give you from the actual meat of the animal. So we said in that connection that Shmuel says that there are cases where we said we figure out what the Shevach is, and Malin Oisin Bedamim, we figure out the monetary value of that, and then that's what's paid instead of readjusting the division accordingly. For example, one of them was a Bechur and a Poshup. Instead of readjusting the division of the land to make up for that, for the Shevach, instead we just we say that the difference is reimbursed in money. And another one was Baal Choyv L'Lekeach, and a third one was Baal Choyv L'Yisim. So now let's analyze that point, the Gemara says. Omele Ravina L'Ravashin. Miyom HaShmuel Baal Choyv L'Lekeach Yohiv L'Shvach. Did Shmuel really say that in a case of a Baal Choyv, where, so you have, again, the case is Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. Later on, Reuven sold some of his properties to Levi, and we know that Shimon is entitled to go collect the properties from Levi if he can't find anything of Reuven's. He's collecting from Nechasim Meshubadim. But if there's Shvach involved, if meanwhile Levi has improved the field, then he gets to keep that Shvach, and the Baal Choyv, if he wants to take the field, Shvach included, is going to have to reimburse him for that. So did Shmuel really say that? So in other words, let's say, for example, that the field was worth 100 when Levi bought it. Now, by the time that he's improved it, it's worth 120. So what we said before was that Shmuel was saying, Reb Nachman had said in the name of Shmuel, that what would happen is when the Baal Choyv is taking the field, we wouldn't say, well, you're only going to take 5/6 of the field, which is 100 out of 120. You are Tacta taking the whole field. However, you have to reimburse Levi $20 for the shvach of the field. But did Shmuel really say that? But we also find that Shmuel said that a Baal Choyv does collect the shvach without reimbursing anything. So how does that work? So Omalei, Ravashi answers like Kasha, kan b'shvach ha-magia l'ksefayim, v'kan b'shvach she'en magia l'ksefayim. It depends what kind of shvach we're talking about. Are we talking about shvach ha-magia l'ksefayim? Literally means that it reaches the shoulders. So Rashi explains over here, let's say, for example, the shvach is that grain has grown in the field and it's magiel ksefayim, it's reaching the shoulders in the sense it's already fully grown, it's already at its height. And when you walk into the field, the tops of it reach to your shoulders. So at that point, then, it doesn't really, it's already fully grown. Therefore, if the Baal Chayiv is going to take that together with the field, then he's going to have to reimburse the Lekeach for it, like Rab Nachman had said. But if it's Shvach She'en Magil Ksefayim, if it's not fully grown yet, then it's also part of the Shibud, and therefore the Baal Chayiv is going to take it as well without reimbursing. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos has some questions with that. In other places in the Gemara, it seems to imply that even once it's fully grown, as long as that even when it's still attached to the ground, as long as it still needs to be attached to the ground, then it's also considered part of the ground. So rather, Tosfos says that Shvach HaMagil HaKsefayim is where it's going to be, where it's already ready to be harvested, not just that it's fully grown in its height, but it's actually, actually what it means is, Tosfos gives two explanations. One is that it means that it's ready to be already put on the shoulder. It's already ready to be harvested and to be bundled up and carried on people's shoulders, Tosfos says not that it's ready now, but rather it means anything that's going to eventually be taken off, for example, Paris. So even unlike Rashi, who's saying we're talking about where it's already fully grown, Tosfos says that no, even where it's not fully grown, Paris are considered Shvach HaMagil HaKsefayim because it eventually will be placed on the shoulders and carried away, as opposed to the other kind of Shvach would be where the ground itself has been fertilized or whatever and now is better quality. That's one explanation that Tosfos says. And then the other brings from a bit of time that Shvach HaMagil HaKsefayim means that he put effort into it. Shvach She'en HaMagil HaKsefayim would be an improvement in the property that he didn't put effort into himself. Tosfos just says over here, it refers to what he explains in Baba Basra about that. In Baba Basra, it explains, for example, let's say over there, of a tree that became fatter, where it's not, that happens by itself, it grows by itself, without him putting in tirche into it. So in any case, so there's a few different possibilities of what Shvach HaMagil HaKsefayim and Ein Magil HaKsefayim means, but in any case, the point is, one kind the Baal Chayiv can take along with the karka and not reimburse the Lekeach, not reimburse Levi, and in the other case, he can't. So the Gemara continues, Ravina says, "V'hamaisim b'chol yoyim," but we have such things happen all the time where Baal Chayiv takes property to satisfy a debt. And Shmuel would say that you take even Shvach HaMagil HaKsefayim, according to whichever of the three definitions you follow of that. So that's obviously not the distinction. Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers, like Kasha, Hodem Masik Be'Kashir Aro Shvacha, Hodle Masik Be'El Kashir Aro. You have to also consider, says Rav Ashi, what's the actual amount that he owes him? Does he owe him the equivalent of the land plus the Shvach? In the example that we said before, let's say, is the debt 100 or is it 120? If the debt is 100, then when he's collecting a field with the shvach is worth 120, then he's going to have to reimburse him 20 because he can't collect a field worth 120 for a debt that's 100. But if he when we say to the Baal Chayiv, if you want to take the entire field rather than let's say 5/6 of it, then you're going to have to reimburse the lekeach the $20 for the shvach that was created while he had the field. On the other hand, if the whole debt is 120, well, then he takes the whole 120, including Shvach HaMagil HaKsefayim, and doesn't reimburse the Lekeach anything because he's anyway owed the entire amount. So the Gemara asks, Hanichal Amanda Omar I Isle Zuzi LeLekeach. So Tosfos also discusses over here that all of this would apply even if he's taking from Yisoymin, It's one thing with a lekeach. You can argue the lekeach, after all, has recourse over here. He can go to he can go back to Reuven, who sold him the field, and say, "Look, you sold me this field. I put work into it, and there was shvach in it now. And now your bachoiv took it away from me to satisfy $120 debt that you owed him. So therefore, you need to reimburse me." So Tosfos discusses. Now, you could have a case where instead of Reuven selling it to Levi, you can have a case where Reuven died and his Yesomim inherited the property. There, obviously, the Yesomim don't have anybody to go back to and say, "Well, you gave it to us and it was taken away from and it was taken away by Shimon." There's nobody for them to go back to. Nevertheless, Tosfos discusses that the same din would apply, and they go on and discuss in detail about all the various possible permutations of these din. Okay, well, the Gemara continues. Now, this would work according to the opinion, which is it's a machloikas in Masechta Ksuvos. It's also mentioned in other places in Shas where even if the lekeach has the money to buy off to pay off the baal chayv, he can't loy motzi masalik by the baal chayv. He's not able to remove the baal chayv. In other words, so let's say for example the baal chayv is owed $120. Shimon is owed $120. Levi has a property which again with the shvach and everything is also worth $120. So we were saying that Shimon is entitled to collect it. Now, what if Levi actually has $120 available in cash? Or at least you could also have another case. You could have where let's say he only has $20 in cash for the shvach. So you have a machlokas in Ksuvos and in other places can he say to Shimon, "Look, instead of you taking this property from me, you're taking it because you're owed $120. So fine, here's $120. Let me keep my property, and afterwards I'll go deal with Reuven and get reimbursed from him." So there is an opinion that even so, Shimon would be entitled to say, "No, I don't want your money. I want this land," and therefore he'd be entitled to take it, shvach included. So it works out according to the opinion. Even if Levi has money, he doesn't have the right to keep the baal chayv from taking the property. The baal chayv can say, Shimon can say, "I want the property regardless." Shapur, well, then again, we can easily understand what Shmuel is talking about. That then we're saying that if the baal chayv is owed the entire amount, including the shvach, well, then, in other words, we're saying that he takes the whole thing. And if he's not owed the whole amount, then he still takes the whole thing. And then he reimburses him with money for the shvach. Because in the case where he's not owed the whole thing. But according to the opinion that says, Tosfos mentions that based on that Gemara over there in Ksuvos, it's Rami Bachoma who wants to say that, who says that if Levi does have the money, he could tell the Baal Chayv, he has the right to tell the Baal Chayv, "I will give you the money, I'm keeping the field." Well then, in that case, Le Male, why can't Levi say, "Look, if I had had the whole 120, I would have prevented you from taking the entire land at all, because I would have paid you the whole 120 and that's that. Hashta, so now, fine, I don't have the whole 120, but you want to take the karka with the shvach and everything, why not? Why are you taking the whole thing? Havli griva da'ara shir shvachoi. Give me a portion." Griva literally means a saw. But it means, in other words, a portion of land that would be equal to my shvach. In other words, let him be able to say, "Look, the original field was worth 100. Now with my shvach, it's worth 120. That means, in other words, and you're only owed 100. Anyway, if you take the whole field, shvach included, you're going to be reimbursing me 20. So why do that? Leave me $20 worth of the field and you take the rest of it." So why shouldn't he be able to do that? He has every right to tell the Baal Chayv, you're not collecting this field since I have money for it. So in this case, he would say, I have money. I have $20, or actually I'm going to have $20 as soon as you reimburse me. So instead of doing that, instead you should just take most of the field and leave me the rest of it. Why can't he say that? Why would Shmuel say that necessarily the Baal Chayv is taking the entire field and just reimburses Levi with cash? The answer is Amalei, sort of Ashi answers, Hochab Mayaskinen, you're going to Shabya Niale Apusik. The case would be where Reuven, to begin with, when he borrowed the money, he made this field an Apusiki, where we've talked about before. And an Apusiki is, it's a mortgage, basically. He put a lien davka on this field. Rashi elsewhere defines Apusiki as short for the words Apoi Tehei Kayam, the debt will stand on this. The Rambam learns it a little bit differently. Poi tikne, that the apusiki is short for here you'll acquire, and then in the Aruch and Musaf Aruch, whatever, it brings that the word apusiki comes from a Greek word that means something like a mortgage. Anyway, the point is that so he made it an apusiki for the debt. De omale lo yehe lacha peiroin. Elamizeh, he tells him to begin with, you're going to be paid only from this field, and therefore now we wouldn't apply the din that if the Lekeach had money, then he could tell if Levi had money, he could tell Shimon, the Baal Chayv, I'm going to keep the field, I'll pay you the money, because Shimon can say, to begin with, this field is an apusiki. It's not a regular case of a shibud. It's a special case of apusiki, and therefore I have every right to collect the field, and therefore I don't want your money. So in that case, then now he can also say, I'm collecting the entire field with the shvach that's in it. And as far as your money, I'll reimburse, as far as the fact that I'm owed only 100 and the field is worth 120, then fine, I'll reimburse you that $20. But if it hadn't been an apusiki, then yes, according to that opinion, the Lekeach Levi would have been able to say that I'll give you money and I'll keep the field, or at least part of it. So Tosfos discusses at some length over here about different opinions about it. Actually, first of all, there are Rishonim who learn the Baal Amor learns that the Baal Chayv even when it's an apusiki, are we saying even though he's not owed the full amount, including the shvach, what do we do? So you have, does he take the shvach and then he reimburses the other guy? Or do we say, because after all, with an apusiki, we would consider as though he owned the field all along, so the shvach in effect belongs to him? Or would we say that no, he's not collecting more than the amount of his chayv, and therefore if he's going to take the greater amount, the shvach, then he's going to have to reimburse the other guy. Anyway, Tosfos discusses over here at some length when the Gemara is giving this answer of apusiki. Is Rav Ashi changing his mind and going back on the previous answer? It doesn't matter for our purpose. Once we're talking about an apusiki, are we talking about he was owed 100 or whether he's owed 120? Either way, it wouldn't matter. He'd still have to reimburse the lekeach for the expenses that he put into the shvach for this field. So because you have a concept which the Gemara mentions in other places. Suppose that in a case aside from our case over here, if a person owns a field and somebody else goes into that field and starts improving it for whatever reason, whether he didn't realize it wasn't his, whatever it is exactly he was thinking, then later on, after all, the owner of the field benefits from that, and therefore he has to reimburse him at least for his expenses or for the shvach, whichever is less. The Gemara discusses it in various places. So now maybe it's the same kind of thing. An apusiki, in effect, belongs to the Baal Chayv to begin with, because it was specifically earmarked as the one with which this debt is going to be paid. Therefore, still though, Levi did put improvements into it, and therefore Shimon should owe him for that. At least he should have to pay him his expenses for that, because now he's gaining from it. Or Tosfos is saying, or maybe Rav Ashi is not changing his mind, and we're still talking about there's a difference whether he's owed the full amount or whether he's owed the value of the field plus the shvach. versus not that that if so then we would say that if it's a so then if it's an aposiki, then he would collect everything and not even pay the lekeach anything. And if not, if he's not owed the full amount, then he's going to reimburse him for the actual shvach. So Tosfos discusses all of that in some detail over here, and how we would say that. And Tosfos points out, look, I mean, all of this is Rav Ashi and Ravina going back and forth. So therefore, it seems more logical to say that that Rav Ashi is not changing his mind. He's just adding another detail. He's saying that there is a difference how much he's owed, but in addition, you also have to factor in whether it's an aposiki or not. Gemara continues. Omar Rava, Gozal v'hishbiach u'mochar. Now, how about another case? What about if a person stole something? And so now, again, we had Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon before saying that there are certain cases where we've said that the Gazlan does acquire the Shvach. We said, for example, that he stole an animal and later on it has a baby or wool or whatever. So we said, Rabbi Yehuda had said that the Gazlan gets to keep it. And then Rabbi Shimon said he gets to keep a percentage of it. So Omar Rava gozal b'hishbiach, if he stole something and made a shvach and improved it, and then he sold it, or if gozal b'hishbiach v'horish, or he stole it and improved it, and then he bequeathed it to his children, mashi shbiach mocho, mashi shbiach horish, then we would say that that the sale includes whatever he improved, and the Yerusha includes whatever he improved. And therefore, in other words, so that would mean again, according to Rav Shimon, they're entitled to a percentage of it, and according to Rav Yehuda, they'd be able to keep the whole thing mipnei takanas hashavim, because again, as we learned earlier in the Gemara, we want to make it easier for the Gazlan to do tshuva, and therefore we're not going to make him give back the shvach. So we would say that he gets to keep it and in that case that's how it is. We talked about yesterday that actually the Rambam holds that this is only la'achar yush, and therefore only if the original owner was miyayish, only then would we talk about that he or the one he sold it to or the one he yaushened it to or whatever are entitled to the wool or the baby or whatever other kind of shvach. So now, Boy Rava. So Rava asks in this connection, Ishbiach lekeach mahu. What about though if it wasn't the Gazlan himself who created the shvach? What if it was? What about if it was the lekeach who did that? So would we say that the same way as the Gazlan gets to keep the shvach, so also the lekeach, or do we differentiate between them? And again, Rashi says that the question is primarily according to Rav Shimon. So the question would be according to Rav Shimon about the percentage that Rav Shimon says that he gets. Or Rashi says again, you could say that maybe it's the question would be according to Rav Yehuda and according to our Mishnah, where we say he keeps the whole thing because of takanas hashavim. So what would it be? Bossa de Boya, Hoda Poshta, after Rava asked the question, he was able to answer it. Ma mocha rishon l'sheni kol shchusra tova liyadei. We say, what does the first one sell or bequeath to the second one? Whatever schus comes to his hand, meaning, in other words, whatever, the same way as if the Gazlan himself had created the improvement, then we would say that he gets to keep it, a percentage of it, or the whole thing, as the case may be. So it would be also if the Lekeach made the improvements himself, the same thing would happen. So again, according to most Rishonim, we're talking about even before Yush, and according to the Rambam, only after Yush. Tosfos points out there's a difference in this regard between Karka and Metalkalin. And Agos Agra brings that there's another distinction that can be made. The Rif draws a distinction between whether the Shvach came by itself for example, like we said before, a tree that became fatter over time, where he didn't necessarily put in any effort into that happening. It just happens naturally, or wool growing on the animal would be another example, versus where he himself put in shvach, like by fertilizing the field. That would be another way to differentiate whether he gets to keep that shvach or not. Continues the Gemara, boy robber, he shbiach over kechovim ma. What would happen if a guy stole something and made an improvement to it? Would we say the same din that according to Rabbi Yehuda or according to Rabbi Shimon, that he keeps a percentage or he keeps all of it depending on the different circumstances exactly? So Amalei Rav Acha midifti the Ravina, Rav Acha midifti later on asks Ravina, what is Rava even asking? Are we supposed to make a takana for a goy? The whole reason why the gazlan is going to be acquiring anything of this shvach is because takana sashovim, to make it easier for him to do tshuva. Since when do we make such takanas on behalf of goyim? The takana sashovim. It's true, of course, a goy can do tshuva, like we find the people of Nineveh, but we chachamim don't have to make a takana for their benefit to make it easier for them to do tshuva. If they do tshuva, good, and if not, then they got to do tshuva regardless whether it's difficult for them or not. Like we talked about the other day, for example, we had in the Gemara about the point about that if a person stole a beam and built it into a building, then he's entitled, because of Takanas Chachamim, to just return the value of the beam rather than tearing down the building. But we find the people of Nineveh didn't do that. Would they have been allowed to? La halacha is the question. We don't necessarily make such Takanas for them. Anyway, Omalei, so Ravina answers, Loit Sricha, yes, but the case where Rava asked the question is needed, could go into Zabnei Lisro. Afterwards, so this guy stole the field or whatever it is, and later on he resold it to a yid. So now the question is, what happens with the shvach? So the Gemara says, still, why would it matter? In for our purposes, when he comes through the power of a guy, then for that purpose, he himself would still be considered like the din of, he would have only the same rights as the guy. So the goy is not going to own any of the shvach because we don't make takanas hashavim for him. So therefore, the takanas hashavim wouldn't apply to the yid who bought it from him either. So again, what is Rava's question? And the answer is loy tzricha, yes, but Rava needs to ask the question. So going to Gaza Yisrael, v'zabne ni'alei, we're talking about that there are many people involved. A yid stole the property. Or the object or whatever, and then sold it to a goy. Then the goy made improvements to it. And then he turned around and sold it to another yid. So now you have the item belonged to Reuven. Then Shimon stole it, sold it to John the goy, and John turned around and sold it to Levi. And now we're talking about in between, John the Goy had put Shvach into it. Actually, the Marshal talks about really, the question would be if the original Yisrael, the Gazlan, improved it as well. He talks about, and the Tertus Chaim disagrees and says that in that case, there's no question. Anyway, the question would be, now this is Rava's question. Do we say that since the original Gazlan was Yisrael and the final owner was also a Yisrael, do the Chachamim make a takana for such a thing of takana sashovim and say that he's going to be able to keep that he's going to be able to keep the shvach? Or maybe since there's a goy involved in between, then maybe the Chachamim don't make the takana. And the answer is teiku. We can't be sure. So therefore, as usual with a case of teiku, we can't allow, in this case, he's muchzik in the shvach. So therefore, we might not be able to take it away from him. But if the nigzel takes it away, then we wouldn't be able to take it from the nigzel. Okay. Now we're going to talk about different kinds of shinuyim. We talked about at the beginning of the parak, various kinds of shinuyim. What exactly is considered a shinui that's koine or not? We had at the beginning of the parak, for example, where a person stole boards that were already planed smooth and made a keli out of them. We said that's not considered a shinui because all you have to do is take the keli apart and the boards go back to being boards. So now the Gemara is going to talk about, in a similar vein, other cases of shinui like that and when we say that a shinui is koine and when not. So Omar Rapapa, If a person stole a tree, dikla specifically means a palm tree, but in general, a tree from somebody else, the katle, and he chopped it down, even though then, after chopping it down, he took it and replanted it in his own ground, loikoni, he's not kone it, and therefore, when the guy wants his tree back, he's going to get the actual tree back. The gazlan is going to have to give him the actual tree. There's a shinui. No, because my timer, mi'ikra dikla mikri vahashtanami, dikla mikri, because it still has the same name as before. It's still, before it was called a dikla, a palm tree, and now it's still called a palm tree. Tosfos points out, it's one thing if it was an animal that he had shechted or killed, there it's a more obvious shinui, whereas here with a tree that was taken from one place and replanted in another, is not just such a dramatic change, and therefore the Papa says that's not considered a shinui. In fact, also the Papa continues, dikla v'ovid goyvi, what about if he stole a tree and made it into logs, he cut it up into pieces, also loikoni, he's also not koinet. He'd have to return those logs, hashtamias goyvi de dikla mikri, because they're called logs of a tree, and therefore the name hasn't really changed. Mefoshim talk about different details over here. First of all, Tosfos elsewhere points out that even we're going to talk about an Omid Bey, an animal that got older, that's considered a shinui, because then the animal is not really able to function as well. But here we're talking about the tree that was replanted. The tree that was chopped down and replanted, there's really only the Oruchaner, and Sukkah explains that actually no change has been made really to the tree itself. It was just detached from the ground. And here we're talking about, okay, it was also cut into logs, but still that's not as much of a shinui as some of these other things. We talked before about wool that was dyed, but there you also have that's considered a greater shinui because it looks much different. But here in these cases, Rav Papa is saying it's not enough of a change for it to be considered a shinui. On the other hand, continues Rav Papa, goyvi v'avdino kshuri. On the other hand, if he stole logs and made them into beams, where they are now, in other words, he shaped them to make them into beams, then that already would be considered a shinui. So therefore he's koina, that's already considered a shinui. What about kshuri ravravi v'avdino kshuri zutri? What about if they were large beams and he cut them into smaller beams? Then also, loikoni, he's not koina that because they're still called beams, but avdino tsutsiyasa, but if he turned them into smaller planks of wood, into smaller pieces of wooden boards, koni, then he would be koine because now they have a different name. Before they were called beams, and now they're called boards. So the basic idea is, in other words, there has to be enough of a shinui in it for it to be considered a shinui. Even when it's an irreversible shinui, you still have to have enough of a change in it. If the appearance of it, the color of it had changed, for example, in the case of wool, that would be considered a shinui, but where there's no change in color, then it has to at least be that there's a change in name. As we're saying over here, for example, going from logs to beams, or going from beams to boards. Actually, tzitziyasa over here, which Rashi defines as kroshim, Rashi defines them as boards. The Shita Mekubetzis brings an opinion from one of the Gaonim that says that it means really small pieces, so like chips of wood. So they're not even functional as beams or anything like that. B'chlal, they're only functional as small chips or pieces of wood. Okay. Omar Rava. Rava says, here's another din. Haiman de gozel luliva. If a person stole a lulav, va'avdinu hutzi, and he made it into leaves, in other words, he tore the leaves off the shedra, koni, then he's koneit with the shinui, demi'ikra luliva makri v'hashta hutzi, because it has a different name. Before it was called a lulav, now it's called leaves. Similarly, hutzi va'avdinu chufya, if he stole the lulav leaves, the loose leaves, and he made a broom out of them, koni, then he's also koina, me'ikra hutzi v'hashta chufya, for the same reason, because it had a different name before. Before it was called hutzi, which means leaves, and now it's called chufya, now it's called a broom. But Rava says, Chofya va'avde shir shura. But on the other hand, if he stole a broom and then took the leaves and made them into a rope by braiding the leaves together, loikoni, then that wouldn't be a shinui, that is koina, my time at the hotter sauce of Ivahavya Chofya, because all you have to do is undo the braid and it goes back to being a broom. And as we learned at the beginning of the perek, a shinui achozo the briyase, where the shinui is going to be reversible, then it's not koina. There are cases where we said that it's koina because of Takana Sashavim, but not necessarily always. Okay. Boy Rapapa. Now Rapapa asks the question, speaking of the lulav, Nechakat Yumas Mahu. What happens if a person stole a lulav and then the tumas was split? Now, you have many different explanations among Rishonim of what the tumas is. The main place where the Gemara discusses this is in Masechta Sukkah. So we have Rashi explains, and Tosfos explains similarly, that it means the top middle leaf, as we're familiar with when we go buy the lulav every year before Sukkot. We're familiar with, we always go and check that top middle leaf that sticks out above all the others to see whether it's unsplit or not. And we buy one that's unsplit, because the Gemara says over there that if it's split, then the lulav may be possible. Tosfos discusses that over here, and says that actually, if you say like that, it's going to be very difficult to find a kosher lulav. Nowadays, we're able to find more of them, but back in Tosfos' times, apparently it would be very difficult to find one where the tip wasn't split like that. So Tosfos discusses there may be a difference whether it started out like that or whether it was split later, versus where to begin with, it grows with a natural split. Then Tosfos brings from Rashi in Masechta Sukkah, who explains that Nechokat Yumas would be actually more than that. It's split so deeply down, that even the Shedra itself is a little bit split. And then Tosfos discusses other possibilities. Now, there is a whole nother explanation of the Rambam, who says that the tumas refers to, we know, of course, that lulav leaves grow in pairs. You have every two leaves are joined together along the spine of the leaf. So the Rambam learns nechokat tumas would be that most of the leaves of the lulav have been split along that spine, and now you have the leaves, instead of being folded over like they are in a normal lulav, instead now each leaf is by itself. Anyway, so and again, the Gemara says there in Sukkah that such a lulav would be possible. So now Rapapa is asking, Nechokat Yumas Mahu, what would be the din if a person stole a lulav and then the tumas was split according to these various definitions of what the tumas is? Mahu, what would be the din? Is that enough of a shinui? Because now that lulav is possible for the mitzvah of lulav, so therefore the gazlan would be koneh, or maybe not. So in Sukkah, the Gemara asks, what would be the din? Is the lulav still kosher? Here, the Gemara is bringing it as part of the dinim of Gzela to say that the question is whether, if we say it's possible, then we could say the gazlan is koneh, and if not, then not. So the Gemara says, Toshma, ad amr of Mosun, amr of Yishrobin Levi, nitrat yumas possible. Rav Mosun is saying in the name of Rabbi Yishrobin Levi that if the tumas was removed, was cut off, then it's possible. So Tosfos says, Tosfos discusses that the Gemara there in Sukkah talks about Niktam, the Mishnah there says, Niktam Roshay, if the tip of it was cut off, then it's possible. Is that the same thing? Is that the same thing as we're talking about over here? Because why would Rabbi Yishrob ben Levi have to say it then? So Tosfos says maybe Niktam Roshay means that most of the tips of the leaves were cut off, so we don't just mean at the top of the lulav, we mean along the whole length of the lulav. And then on the other hand, you could argue maybe even what Rabbi Yishrob ben Levi is talking about, where the whole tumas was removed, which then it looks then it might conceivably regrow, as opposed to Niktam, when it was cut off, when the tip of it was cut off, where there it's not going to regrow. Anyway, Rabbi Yishrob ben Levi says nitlaf tumas posel my lav who adin lanechlaka. Shouldn't we assume that he means the same thing also if it was divided? So, and the Gemara says, "Why not necessarily nitla shiny? It's different where the whole thing was removed. Daha chasulah, because now something of the goof of the lulav is missing, but not in the case of nechaka, where nothing's missing; it's just split." Ikadamri, then there's another version of what Rabbi Shimon Levi says. Tashma do Amar Rav Mos and Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi nechalkat yumas nasa kamisha nitla upasul. If the tumas is divided, then it's considered as though it was split, as though it was removed, and therefore it's possible. So shmamina, that shows therefore that if nechlakat yumas, the lulav becomes possible, and therefore yes, we would say that the lulav now has a new status. It's no longer called a lulav. Now it has a different name. Now it's just called leaves, and therefore, in fact, the gazlan would be koneh. So it goes together. Once the lulav is possible, then that's also a shinui by which the gazlan acquires it, and now only has to pay the value of it. Okay. More dinim about this. Amar Papa, Hayman de Gozel Afra Michabre. If a person stole earth, dust from somebody else, but Abdela Vainsa, and he took that dirt and made it into a brick. Loy Connie, he's not acquiring the brick with that. So when we make him pay, or when he does truva, he's gonna have to return the actual brick itself. My time at the Hodim Ashavi Le Afra, because the brick can just be crushed back into the dirt that it came from, and therefore that's a Shinui Achozu Le Briyasa. The Tosfos Rid points out, again, we did talk about before the Shvach, where that the Gazlan gets the Shvach. Here there was a Shvach involved, because after all, he put an effort into making it a brick. So fine, he would be entitled to be reimbursed by the Nigzel for that Shvach, as we talked about before. In addition, also the Rashba talks about, we're not talking about where the brick was fired in an oven. Once it was, then yeah, that would be a shinui sheina chozer. But we're talking about over here where it was the kind of, in those times they used to make bricks by putting mud together and drying them in the sun. So that kind of shinui chozer the briyasa, because you can easily break it apart back into the dirt that it was formed from. On the other hand, Rav Papa continues, Levensa v'Avde Afra. On the other hand, if it was the other way around, he stole a brick and ground it down into the dirt that it came from, Koni, then he is Kona with that shinui. My Amrit. So what are you going to say? You're going to think that that's not considered a shinui because it's reversible. And by the way, in this case, the Tosfos Rid says he certainly can't say Harei Shalach Lefanecha. He would have to pay for the value of the actual brick. But he does get to keep the dirt. My Amrit, what are you going to argue on the contrary? Dilma Hodav Avad Levavenda. You could argue that conceivably he could take that dirt and make it back into the brick that he originally stole. No, the difference is Hai Levainta Achritihu. This is a different brick already. We say that it's like a new face has come over here. In other words, this is not the same brick as he stole. After all, it still needed to be shaped on its own. It may be different. Rashi points out it may be a little bit different in size. Ef shalat samtsim. It's impossible to make it exactly the same size as it was before. So we can't call that a shinui achozer lebriyasa. Rather, we would call that ponim chadoshes bo'olakan. The new brick is not the same as the old brick, and therefore we wouldn't say that he has to return the brick. Instead, if he made it back into a brick, we would say he only has to pay the value of it. Similarly, Va'omra Papa, and Rapapa says another similar kind of din, Haiman de Gozal Naska Mechabre. If a person stole a bar of metal from somebody else, Va'ovit Zuzi, and he took that metal and turned it into coins, Loi Koni, so he's not Koina for the same reason, my time a harder Ovid Lohunaska, because all you have to do is melt down the coins and they become the same piece of metal that it was before. Now, Rashi points out the difference is, so again, it's a shinui achozer lebriyasa. Here you can't call it ponim chadoshes because, unlike when it comes to a brick, you want the brick to be a certain shape and a certain size. Here, when it comes to naska, a person doesn't really care. Naska is just a random shaped piece of metal, and therefore a person is not makbid that it should be a certain size or a certain shape. So therefore, since it can be melted down to make another random piece, then therefore that's considered a shinui achozer lebriyasa. But pashtus, then that would mean that Rashi might say, if we're talking about, let's say he stole a certain one of those standard size gold bars or something and then made it into coins, then maybe indeed we would say that if it's melted down, ponim chadoshes bo'olakan, because if it's melted down, it would have to be reshaped into a bar of exactly the same size and weight and whatever. So it would be similar to the brick. I don't know, though. Rashi doesn't say that specifically one way or the other. Anyway, but on the other hand, continues Rav Papa, Zuzi v'Avdinu Naska. But the other way around, and Tosfos, by the way, points out that that would only be if he made it into coins, then we're saying he's not Kohen. If he made it into a different kind of keli, for example, he stole silver and made it into a cup, then he would be Kohen that. After all, it would be no different than, for example, what we talked about at the beginning of the Perek, where he stole boards and made them into keli. Whereas Tosfos says, a brick or coins don't have such chashivos, unlike a keli has chashivos. So then already we would say, takonas hashavim, and he's able to keep it. But where he only made it into a brick, or he only made it into coins, then we're saying he's not koinim that. On the other hand, zuzi v'avdinu naska, but again, if he stole coins, and he melted them down and made a bar of metal out of them, koni, then he is koin of them, my amrit hodur ovid lahu zuzi. You're going to argue again, he could conceivably recoin them back into coins. Again, we would say ponim chadoshes, bo'olakan, those coins are not the same as the original ones, and a person is makbid on the shape and size of his coins, so therefore that wouldn't be considered a shinu achoiz or lebriyase. Then Rav Papa continues, shchimi v'avdinu chadti, what about if he stole old blackened coins? The word shochum, the word shchimi, means black. So if he stole blackened old coins, v'avdinu chaddi, and he made them look new, so he rubbed them with sand, or he cleaned them with whatever, he cleaned them with soap and detergent, or he rubbed them with sand or whatever to make them nice and shiny. Loi koni, he's not koinu with that. That's not considered a shinui, because again, it's a shinui achoz of the briyase, because eventually those coins will eventually tarnish and blacken again. Chaddi v'avdinu shchimi, but on the other hand, if he stole new, bright new coins and made them black and tarnished, koni, then he is koinu them, my amrit, because again, what are you going to say? Harder ovid lohu chaddi. You could argue he's going to make them new again. Again, no, maybe here you don't actually say that. They don't become completely new, like maybe yadiya shichmaihu. You can still see a certain blackness. You can still see a certain amount of the tarnish that was on there before. So therefore, it is a shinu shein. It is a shinu shein echozer. So therefore, the Rosh actually has the girsa over here that, again, ponim chadoshes ba'olakan, similar to the other ones, whereas the girsa we have in front of us in the Gemara is not even ponim chadoshes, because you can always see some of the blackness still on them. Okay. The Gemara had, the Mishnah had finished off, Zeha klal kol gazlonin meshamin kashasek zela. The Mishnah had finished off a general rule, all gazlonin pay according to the value of the thing at the time of the zela. Which again, we said that the Mishnah is according to the Yehuda in the Machloikas that we had before, and that means that the Gazlan keeps the Shvach, or if he's returning it together with the Shvach, then he gets reimbursed for that Shvach. So the Gemara says, Zehaklal li'isuyimai. What is these words, Zehaklal, coming to include? Now, there are actually two different Gersois over here in the Rishonim, whether the Gemara is asking on the word Zehaklal or whether it's asking on the word Kol. The Mishnah had said, Zakla, Kola Gazlan and Mishaman Kishasek Zela. So is the girsa as we have it in front of us in the Gemara, that the Gemara is asking on what does Zehaklal come to include, or is the Gemara asking on the word kol? Because the Rif and the Rosh have the Girsa Kol, and the Nimuka Yosef on the Rif explains, because the Kol, we know what it includes. It includes what the Gemara is going to say over here. So you have two different things. You have Zehaklal, we know what it comes to include, that even if the price of the thing went up or down between when he stole it and when he went to Beis Din, then we go according to the original value. So the Gemara doesn't need to ask what Zehaklal comes to, what we learn from Zehaklal. So they understand that the Gemara is not asking on Zehaklal, the Gemara is asking on the word kol. On the other hand, Tosfos in Bava Metzia, where it also brings this line, Tosfos over there explains that no, Yoikra v'Zoyla, the fact that if it goes up and down in value, that we learn from the actual words, Kol HaGazlonim Mesham Keshasek Zela, which means exactly that, and therefore that the Gemara, yes, here is asking, what do we learn from Zehaklal, which is meant to add something that we didn't say so far. Anyway, so Zehaklal L'Yisuyimai or Kol L'Yisuyimai, you have the different Yusuris. So the answer is, La Suya, Hodu Amr Rav Ila. it comes to include what Rabbi Ila had said, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, Gonav Tlev Nasa Ayil, where we said that if a person stole a baby sheep and then it grew and became a ram while it was in his possession, Ego Vanasa Shur, or he stole a calf and it grew to become a shur while it was in his possession. So Rabbi Eli had said, Nasa Shinui Biyadu Knoi, that's considered a Shinui in his possession, and therefore he's Koinet, and therefore Tobachumacher, and therefore if later on he goes and shechts or sells that full grown animal, and we learned previously in the seventh parak that usually you would be chayiv for Tashlum Abab Chamisha for that. So no, Shalohu Tevech, Shalohu Mocher, then it's already considered his animal that he's shechting, or his animal that he's selling, and therefore he's not chayiv for Tashlum Abab Chamisha. So we had over there Rabbi Chanina disagreeing, and we had a whole discussion about the ins and outs of that. We said it's not necessarily considered shinui hashem because the animal can be called a shur or an ayil even where it was born. And we had a discussion back and forth between Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Ila and what each of them would say in this case. So our Mishnah then the zehaklal or the call of our Mishnah is coming to include Rabbi Ila's din. The Gemara tells, "Hahu gavra de gozo padna de tori mechavre." It happened once that a person stole a pair of oxen from somebody else. Rashi points out the word padna. In Hebrew, the word is tsemed boker, which means a pair of oxen that usually are yoked together to plow or whatever. In Hebrew, it's called tsemed. In Aramaic, it's called padan. In fact, Rashi says over here, and Rashi brings it in Chumash as well, padan aram is called that because there were two arams. There's aram naharaim and aram tsoiva, so therefore that whole area was called padan aram, meaning like a pair of arams. Rashi also brings over there in the Pasuk another possibility that the word padan means field, so padan aram would mean the field of aram. But anyway, the point is the word padan or padna means a pair. So here, this guy stole a pair of oxen. Also, korev v'hu karba, he went to use those oxen to plow his field. Zorab hu zara, and he used them also to plant the field to sow his grain. One way they used to do in those days when you were planting grain in a field, sometimes you could have your person would go around with a bag of seeds and then scatter the seeds himself. Sometimes what you do is you'd have oxen do it. You'd have a wagon. You'd hitch up a wagon full of seeds to the ox. The wagon would have a little hole in the bottom of it, and the seeds are dropping out of the wagon as you're going around. So he was using these oxen, which he had stolen, to plow and to plant. And then he returned the oxen back to their owner. So the owner of the oxen came to Rav Nachman for a din Torah. Omalahu, so Rav Nachman tells them, Zilu shumo shivcha da ashbach, go figure out the increase in value of the field that the Gazlan used these oxen on, that he plowed and planted. Now the field is worth more as a result of that. So go figure out, and the Gazlan is going to pay that amount. But Rava says, why? Tori Ashbach Aroloi Ashbach. Why? Is it only the oxen that created the Shvach, didn't the field itself? So why are you making him pay the entire Shvach? It should be a percentage of the Shvach. You should have to figure out how much comes from the field versus how much comes from the oxen. Omar, so Rav Nachman answers back, Mika minin shaimu kulei. Do you think I mean we should figure out the entire shvach? You're right, pauga kamina. I mean we have to figure out half of the shvach. Half of it is going to be attributed to the oxen, and the other half is going to be attributed to the field itself, which is fertile. Amalei, but Rava says, seif seif zevahu. After all, this is a case of gezel, v'kahadra be'ena. And you just pay as is, and as we've been discussing all this time, the Gazlan gets to keep the Shvach. D'tnan kol ha-Gazlanim m'shalmim k'shasav Zela. We said that all Gazlanim pay as it was at the time of Zela. So why are you making this guy say here? The guy returned the actual oxen. Why, in addition, are you making him pay the Shvach? Omalei, so Rav Nachman answers him, Loi amina loch. Haven't I told you before, ki yasivne bedina, that when I'm sitting and judging a din Torah, loy temele midi, don't tell me anything, don't argue back on me. To Omar Huna Chavrin Aloy, you should know, my colleague Huna, Rav Huna, had said about me, anov shabur malka achi bedina, He said that I and Shabur Malka are brothers, meaning equals, when it comes to a din Torah. So Shabur Malka could mean the actual king of Persia, who was named that. But Rashi explains that's not what it means. It means Shmuel, the great Amorah of the previous generation, who was an expert in din Emunah. Rav Huna had said. Rav Huna, who was a Talmud of Rav and Shmuel, had said on Rav Nachman that he and Shmuel are co-equals as far as Dine Torah. In other words, Rav Nachman is just as expert in Shmuel as in matters of Dine Mominus. So therefore, Rav Nachman is telling Rava, you should know, when I'm judging this Din Torah and saying this guy has to pay, I'm absolutely right, and you can't contradict me from the Mishnah. Hi Inish Gazlona Atikahu. You should know, he says to Rava, this guy is already an old Gazlon. He already does this kind of thing regularly. So therefore, I want to cancel him. I want to penalize him to prevent him from doing this again and again. If he figures like this, in other words, Rav Nachman is telling Rava, technically you're right. If it was a one-time thing, we wouldn't necessarily make him pay the shvach. But he's doing it again and again, figuring that he can get away with it. All I need to do, he figures, when it comes time to plow and plant my field, I don't need oxen of my own. All I need to do is steal somebody else's oxen and use them. So at this point, Rav Nachman says, I need to penalize him to prevent him from doing it again and again by him having to pay half the shmach that he got out of it. That will discourage him from doing this in the future. Okay. Mishnah says, Gozel behemav izkina. Talking more about shinuyim to a thing that a person stole. If a person stole an animal and it became old, and as we'll learn in the Gemara, we're talking about the kind of aging which therefore makes it that now it's weaker and it can't do work as well. Avodim v'hiskinu, or he stole avodim knanim, and they became old. And same idea. In other words, we're talking about they're old and they're more decrepit now, and they can't do their work as well. Which actually the Maharshal says just that. He says you don't go according to the actual age of the animal, you go according to the capabilities, according to the strength of the animal. Anyway, so in those cases, the Mishnah says, Mishalim Kashasa Gzela, he pays according to the value that it was when he stole it. So we would say before, when he stole it, the animal or the Ebed was strong and healthy and was worth $100. Now it deteriorated and it's worth only 80, so he's gonna have to pay 100. And Rav Meir says, when it comes to an Eved, he can say, Hare Shaloch Lefanecha. Then you can say, here, take back your Eved as it is, and I'm not obligated to reimburse you for anything else, because he says, in other words, basically, as we learned the other day, Avodim are compared to Karka, and by Karka, since you have Karka in an Exelus, that there's no such thing as Gezel by Karka, it's always considered in the Rishus of the original owner, so therefore the mayor takes the view the same thing is true as far as Avodim. We looked about this the other day in the Gemara. So then the Mishnah continues, Gozo Matbeya v'nistak. What about if he stole a coin and it cracked? So now you have a shinui in it. Now you have an irreversible and noticeable shinui in it. Peiris v'hirkivu, or he stole peiris and they rotted. Yayin v'hechmet, so he stole wine and it became sour. And eventually, we're going to learn in the Gemara in a couple of blah. Are we talking about all of it rotted or only part of it? We're going to deal with those details. Anyway, all of those are a shinui, mishalim, kashasa gzela. Therefore, the gazlan keeps the rotted fruit or the spoiled wine or whatever and pays kashasa gzela. On the other hand, the Mishnah continues, matbeyav nifsal. What about on the other hand, if he stole a coin and it was now disqualified? Now, there can be two kinds of disqualification, either where the government declares that this money is no longer usable. That was a very common thing. That was a very common thing back then. You might have, for example, that a new king takes over and Melech Chodesh HaMitzrayim, let's say, and he doesn't like there was a coup, there was a revolution, and he overthrew the previous king, where he might say now all the coins with the old king's portrait on them are disqualified for use, because anybody who uses those shows that they still support the old king. Anyway, so that would be one example. You have something called Salat Medina, where people in a particular country don't want to use the coins anymore. We'll learn in the Gemara what kind of nifsa we're talking about. Anyway, truma v'nikmes, if a person stole truma and it became tame, chometz v'avrolam a Pesach. If he stole chometz and Pesach passed, and now that chometz is also bana behem of nisavde v'avera, or he stole an animal and an avera, it was used for znus, it was used for bestiality, or for example, it was used for avodah zarah. So in those cases, it becomes possible to use as a korban. Now we actually be chayiv misa if there were edim v'asura. So we can be talking about there were no edim v'asura, or there was only one aid, or he admitted, or whatever. In all those cases, not chayiv misa, but nevertheless, it's possible as a korban. Oishin nifsala al gabe amizbeach, or it became possible to bring as a korban because it developed a mum. And Rashi points out, we have to be talking about a mum that's not so noticeable. If it was a noticeable mum, like it broke its arm or leg or whatever, then we would say that's a shinui, and he's cutting it. But here we're talking about it's a barely noticeable shinui, for example, and it has a cataract in its eye. Anyway, in all those cases, or the animal is being taken out to be given skilla because it killed somebody, for example, in all those cases, then the gazlan can say, it's not a noticeable change in all these cases. So therefore, he's able to say, he's able to say, here's your animal as it is, and the fact that now it's also bahano or what have you is not my problem. So the Gemara starts so the Gemara starts with the discussion. This kind of thing is called Hezek Shein and Nicker, and as we've learned in Masech De Gittin, Hezek Shein and Nicker is not really considered a Hezek in Halacha. We had a machlokus about it. The Halacha is not considered a Hezek. It's not considered a Hezek. Therefore, he's not technically chayav to pay. Although there are some cases where the Chachamim are going to make him liable to anyway. We'll learn about all that in the Gemara. So first, the Gemara says, "Omer Papa, loy hiskina hiskina mamish." The word hiskina, that the animal or the eved became old, doesn't literally mean that it became old necessarily. Ela afila kochsha, even if it only became weak, and now therefore it can't do work as well. So even though it's not such a shinui, but nevertheless he's still koine. So the Gemara asks, "Va'anan hiskina tnan?" The Mishnah, after all, said that it became old, implying that only where it's an irreversible change. Once it's old, it can't become young again. Whereas a kachash is usually something reversible; it weakened, but you can always strengthen it up again. And the answer is that's what Rav Papa means. Kochsha kagoin hiskina d'leihoder bori. Rav Papa means where it became weak in the kind of way like becoming old. Where it's not going to recover. But you're right, if it can recover, then that would be a shinui achoz lebriyasei, and as we've learned before, that's not necessarily koina for the gazlan. Maybe in some cases derabanan because of takanas hashavim, but certainly not deraisa. Okay, the Gemara says omale makshisha breid of chista l'ravashi hochi ka'ami mishmeid Rabbi Yechanan, that no. Makshisha says, you should know, they say in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, afilu gonav tlev anasa ayo, even if he stole a young sheep and it became an ayo, it became a mature ram, ego vanasa shur, or he stole a calf and it became a shur, as we learned right before the previous Mishnah, what Rabbi Yehuda says, that in that case he's koina. So yeah, they say nasa shinui biyadoi, it is considered a shinui in his possession, uknoi, and that he's acquiring it, and therefore tovach u'machor shaloy tevech shaloy u'morcher. And therefore, as we said before, if he were to shecht it or sell it, it would be his own animal that he's shechting or he's selling, and he wouldn't be chayef tashlum al-ba v'chamisha. So what are you telling me that our Mishnah is saying that if the animal became old, then it's considered this is not a contradiction from the Mishnah. This is not a contradiction on the Mishnah. The question is that it's not a question. Makshisha is informing Rav Ashi. You should know. They explained in the name of Rabbi Yechanan that even that in such a case where the animal matured and became older, then it's actually considered a shinui and he's koyneh. Omalei, so Rav Ashi tells him, Lav aminalach le tachlif gavri. Haven't I told you before? You shouldn't mix up the people. Don't mix up who said what. That wasn't Rabbi Yechanan who said that. That was Rabbi Ila who said that, as we learned right before the Mishnah. The point being, in other words, why the Gemara is bringing this piece, the Rashba brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, that the Gemara The Gemara wants to inform us how careful the Chachamim always were when it comes to transmitting Torah Shabbat Peh, to be careful, to be particular and careful about which Tana or Amoda they're saying it in, not just to say randomly a name, and we're not sure whether that was or not. Rav Ashi is stressing, no, you have to be very precise in who you're saying that it was in the name from, in the name of, because everything in the Gemara is always the Kabbalah Brura, it's always with a very clear Kabbalah of who said what and what they learned. So they often, this is an important point, because you sometimes have people wonder, how is it? I mean, we have all these machlokas in the Gemara. Isn't it almost like a game of broken telephone or something, where one person says one thing and the other person thinks he says something else? And how do we know that any of it is correct and valid and matching the original anymore? But we're saying, based on this little piece of Gemara, that we're saying that no, absolutely not, because you're checking back always with the one you heard it from, and they're checking with each other to make sure that what they got is accurate, so that there's no broken telephone over here. You are in fact making sure as much as possible, as we're saying over here, don't confuse Rabbi Yochanan with Rabbi Ila. And we have other examples like that in the Gemara, where we see that they're very particular to find out even the tiniest details and make sure they have them as accurate as possible. And thus we have Torah Shabbat Peh is given down from generation to generation all the way down to us. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bess Hashem, and we'll talk about what we said in the Mishnah that Rav Meir had said, that the behemavis skina avodimvis skinu. We say harei shalach lefanecha, and we'll go through that whole discussion, Bess Hashem.